ONV presents.
Welcome to another special edition of ONV's Fort Wayne Up Close. In honor of International Women's Month, we have a special guest today that we want to introduce you guys to in Fort Wayne and introduce the young people to some history in Fort Wayne. To my right, it is my pleasure to introduce and bring on Miss Janois Wilson Brabson. Janois, pleasure being here.
Good morning.
All righty. Now, we talked to you, talk about you being the first female firefighter in Fort Wayne.
Right.
I know you started as a dispatcher, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so now you were a dispatcher for how long?
4 years.
4 years. Okay, so you were doing that. You was doing a great job. And what happened after you were a dispatcher?
Well, then one of the chiefs, Tom Lorraine, came and spoke with me about just being the first to go through the National, Fort Wayne Fire Academy, rather. And he said that it would be history-making, and if I would be ready for that, he felt that I had the characteristics that would be successful. So he said, you could think about it and let me know. But I said, no, I already know. I said, I want to do it.
So you jumped at it.
I jumped. I leaped.
Well, good. So you was already a starting block. So you actually took my next question I was going to ask. What made him reach out and say that you were ready, but he saw it in you, and then you were an eager participant?
Yes, yes. He said that he had noticed and, you know, checked out my work ethics and that I was dependable and consistent and healthy, and that I was the type of person that they thought the fire department needed.
Okay. Now, had you had aspirations of becoming a fire person prior to joining, being a dispatcher or whatnot?
Actually, I was studying sociology. So when the fire and police were recruiting, they came out to the IPU, and I was approached about filling out a public safety form at that time. And I thought, well, I hadn't really thought about being in public safety. I said, but that I still would be able to work with children and do some of the similar things that I thought I would do for sociology. And I really wanted to work with juveniles.
Okay. So you had a passion for kids, and you figured out how to tie that in to this opportunity that you had.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, that's great. Now, you went to the Fire Academy.
Right.
First off, how long was that?
The Fire Academy, I believe, was 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
Training, physical, mostly physical training, going through different things that we'd have to do, like go through and crawl under certain things, do some smoke inhalation buildings, you know, where they would put the smoke in the building, and then we would put our equipment on and go through that. We had to jump from, they had like a tower. It was 4 stories, but we were required to at least jump from the 3rd story. Into the apparatus, which was called like a bag.
Yeah.
rescue bag.
Now, wow, did you have, I ain't gonna say some tomboy type behavior, but I mean, that's physical activity. Were you ever in the military? I mean, had you been a daredevil as a child?
I climbed trees and kicked ball, but I mean, I was not really athletic because I don't think it was that much encouraged when I was in school. I don't even believe they were running track when I was going through high school. So, but I probably could have been because I did like being outdoors.
Okay. And with that, too, put it in so we can put it in perspective. What year are we talking about did you go through the training?
1979.
Okay, 79. So think, yes. That's, yeah. I'm 54.
Not you, so now, don't be naming no years.
I'm not, exactly. I'm just going to say for myself, I can say it's 79, the first female that actually went through the training. That is, you know, that's in my lifetime. And that's, you know, that's relatively recent history. You went through the training. We all know the first, it all, you know, sounds like a love story and us all touchy-feely. Explain to us your experience at the academy. I mean, how was that? I know everybody wasn't welcoming and, yeah, Janoris, let me help you. Or were they? I mean, tell, enlighten us.
Well, you know, these were young fellows that I were in training with. And I think that was very helpful because they were really trying to do their best, and they were at their best behavior. You know, it's 20-some-year-olds, 21, some 20-year-olds, and we all considered each other like a team. We all win, so we're going to help each other. So they were very interested in me being successful. So I don't know if they had been psyched out to say, you make sure that she can complete this. Don't you do anything, you know, to jeopardize her success. But, you know, the most difficult I had was just trying to get the, the ability to be able to run that, you know, where we had to run each morning. You know, like marching or whatever. Instead of marching, we was running.
Yes.
And that took a little bit more for me to be able to get that win to do that. So, of course, when I had time off, that's what I was trying to do, run.
Okay.
You know, so I spent a lot of time doing that. But mostly the chiefs at that time, I believe Richard Ridley came in and helped. We had Tom Wolfcow, Ron Hamm, and some others. But they were very accommodating. They didn't change any of the rules. I had to pass the test the same as the males. I mean, one of the hardest things was pulling that 100-pound dummy. And I thought, my goodness. And so this is so that you can feel that you could rescue someone. It's not just the fact that they want me to be muscular or whatever, but they wanted me to have it in my head that if I had to pull an adult out of a fire, that I would have the confidence to say yes.
Gotcha.
That I could do that.
Yeah. So you, like you said, that's physical tests and training that you have to go through. When you were going through that, like you said, the extra training and practice, could you feel like, I ain't going to say the weight of the world, but the weight of the city that you know who are you representing, does that motivation for you to make sure that you completed those tasks?
I was motivated in the sense that I knew the dangers of fire. I had a sense of what emergency was. Just from working in dispatch, what it would be like if there's an emergency that they're going to need police, they're going to need firefighters, they're going to need medics. So I just, you know, I really wanted to have an impact on how could I make that, you know, something better. What was needed in the fire department that I could bring? I was thinking about that when I was in the academy. Mm-hmm. How would a female make the fire ground, you know, better?
Gotcha. So that's your perspective. How could I make something better? You had that foresight. And how can you bring your skill level to something to make it better? Because is it true that if you didn't come up with some safety programs, you were key in implementing them? Could you share some of these programs that you were instrumental in that you came up with?
Well, there were quite a few programs. When I started, they already had a fire safety education program. I believe they were doing kindergarten through maybe third grade. This seems like when I first started. And then So after I had gone to the National Fire Academy for training, and I was meeting other fire personnel from other cities, other states, and they shared what they were doing. So when I came back from the training, I shared with the fire chief. I said, I think we can do more programs. But I said, I think what I need is some of the firefighters that are on duty, if I could have two of them each day, I said we'd be able to do all the elementary schools within the school year. And we could do grades K through 6. And so that's how we kind of started that. So I started training the firefighters that wanted to be a part of the education team and how we could present that program so that way we could complete every school and not just K through 3.
Okay. And that program was called?
It was just Fort Wayne Fire Safety Education Program.
Okay, okay. Now, did Safe Alive, is that? Was
oh,
that,
Survive Alive
Survive
House.
Survive Alive, there we go.
Yes, we ended up having an opportunity to put the Survive Alive House out there when the police department wanted to move their safety village from Lafayette Street, and they wanted to have a bigger area to build it in, so they had bought that ground out near South Town. And so I met with the police officer that was over that program, Don Wismer, and then from there we talked to our, what is it, I want to say the higher-ups, but his chief, my chief, the mayor's office, and, you know, the safety board. So we had to run it by them to see if we, our departments could join together and perform a safety village that would include everything that the police wanted to teach, plus the fire safety and how to escape a burning house.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha. Now, I'm going to back up a little bit. I got a two-part question for you. A, you made it through the academy, and now you're on the job. Talk a little bit about that experience. I mean, was everybody welcoming him right now? You know, it sounds like you hit the ground running and, you know, we're implementing things. And then the second part of that is funny because I heard you talk about when you were in the academy, all the physical fit training and stuff that you had to take, you struggled with that. But everything you hit me with or that you were instrumental in is implementing programs and doing things of that nature. Did you ever have to go out on a call? Were you ever a part of a...
The fire scene?
Yeah, so yes. Answer the first part, or any order you want.
Yeah, I was out on several fire scenes, especially during training, because that was what we did. When they had a fire during those 8 weeks, we would always go to the fire ground. So the one that I remember was the one, I want to say on North Clinton, where they had the Concordia. Is it the seminary, or they had like dorms or something?
That's
right there?
Seminary, yeah.
Yeah, and so I remember that fire because it was, you know, all those little low buildings, kind of like low, I don't know, I thought they were underground the way they looked. But we had to crawl through those as, you know, rookie firefighters, and it was, you know, it was tough, you know. And then I'm sure that, I want to say I'm pretty sure that they were watching over us, but, you know, you never know. And then there was the George's Restaurant fire, which was off of Bluffton Road. There was that fire was, I want to say, Quimby Village area.
Okay.
And it was a lot of stairs, trying to get hose upstairs, trying to take hose up the stairs, you know, was almost like it was, I do remember struggling, trying not to get tangled up in the hose. And with all this equipment and boots and the air pack, I just thought, wow, I don't know if I'm going to get up these steps, you know, but that was what we had to do. We had to, because the rescue part has to be first, and then the others have to come in later to put the fire out.
Gotcha.
So the rescue people, they're pretty much in there without the fire being put out. I mean, it's hot. The stairs are hot. You can feel it coming through your, you know, your equipment. Your knees and your thighs are feeling that heat.
Okay.
So, yeah, I remember the fire ground.
So you had some action. Did you say you
Oh, definitely,
some
definitely.
To the administrative part, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know, what was your other question?
The other I was asking, once you became a fire, you got through the academy, and now mm-hmm. you're on the fire department, how was that experience? I mean, again, I asked the same. I mean, was it welcoming? Did you have to deal with somebody where you had to prove yourself out the gate?
You know, I think it was both. There were those individuals that were supportive that would come and say, you know, let me know if there's anything I can do to help you. And then you had the others, you know, I think that would say things like, you know, I don't know why we should do anything any different just because she's a woman, or, you know, or maybe we should make it harder so that maybe we wouldn't have to deal with women here yet, you know. So I heard that, you know, about why do we have to deal with the women? Why do we have to change our way of, you know, our firehouse activities? So I don't know what all they were upset about, but I know they were probably just changes in general would make people fuss and be fussy. I didn't think it would do any justice for me to have those conversations with them or to argue with them about it. I just felt like, you know, this door has been open. I'm in it. I'm here, you know, to complete it. I'm here to be successful. So anybody that's having issues and problems, they're going to have to deal with somebody else because I'm not, you know, I'm not here to spend my time like that.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. So Chief Lorraine, when he came to you,
right,
thought that you were the person. I mean, that it's always key, especially when you're going to be the first.
Right.
You know, people, if they know the Jackie Robinson story, Jackie Robinson wasn't the best baseball player when he came. He was that person that they said, hey, this is what you're going to deal with. They knew he could handle it. You know, so it sounds like that's why Lorraine, that's what he saw in you. You know.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah.
I thought it's not going to do any good to fuss with these, you know, these individuals, because it wasn't a lot of them, but it was, you know, quite natural. There was some of them. I mean, I there was one that I did go to the fire chief about, and I asked him, you know, what should I do about this? I said, this is what has happened. I mean, you know, I don't really want to specifically say what it was, but I mean, it wasn't something I could have called the police about. I'll put it that way. Mm-hmm. But and when I talked to the fire chief about it, he said he would talk to that individual and find out what's going on with him. And he said, if you have any more problems with him, he said, you come and let me know. So after that, the individual kind of stayed away from me, and they, you know, wouldn't talk to me at all, you know, just kind of act like I wasn't there. But I was, you know, I was okay with that. I was like, okay, that's fine. And then the only other time when I was actually a district chief and I had individuals that I, you know, commanded, I had trouble with a couple of those individuals, and to the point that I felt that their display of animosity was more psychological, you know, almost like somebody would, you know, kind of punch at you, but they didn't hit you. They punch at you, but they don't hit you. So I talked to the fire chief about those two individuals. I said, I don't know how I would be able to continue to command them if they're not going to be respectful or if they really don't want to do it. And so the fire chief said to them, He said, well, what did you do? If she gave you a command, did you follow her command or did you not? And then, you know, they said, well, no, they didn't. And he said, well, you know, you could be fired. So they were like, they weren't happy with that. But he asked me, he said, what do you want me to do with them? And I said, I just think that they just need to be put on notice what's going on. I said, I'm not after their jobs. I said, I just think something else is wrong, you know, whatever, you know, that they're upset about. I said, but they had not been acting that way all along. I said, so no, why would I want their job? I said, that's up to them. I said, if they're going to continue to behave in the way that they're behaving, I said, they're going to be the one to decide what happens to them. I don't want to be the one to do that. And the fire chief said, wow, you know, okay. He just transferred them right on away from me.
Okay, gotcha. Do you know, what year did Mr. Ridley get on? I know he was the first black fireman. What year was he?
Because I'm trying to. I think he came on like 10 years before me, and I came on in 1975. So what, he'd been like 60, maybe 65, 66, okay. Somewhere in there.
Gotcha. I just tried to put it in perspective.
Yeah, I'm thinking about 10 years before.
Okay, so 10 years before we had the first.
Well, I know it had to be, you know, he would have been. I'm trying to think. He was still on when I was there, okay. But I think he worked longer than 20.
Yeah, but I think it's important because at the end of the day, you weren't just a female firefighter on the department.
Right.
You were African-American female firefighter on the department.
Yeah.
So, you know, to ask some folks, you know, we're talking about a time frame to let you just in and, like I said, wrap our arms around you and say, oh, it's fine. No, it's going to take some time to change some of these mindsets.
True. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so some of that experience that you had, I mean, again, that was a period of time with our society.
It was different. It was during a time, you know, it was right after, they had the Vietnam situation still was going on at the time when I came on. They were still, you know, some individuals that were, you know, in Vietnam. And, they needed people to work in the fire service. They needed, you know, police officers because a lot of the men were, you know, gone to war.
Gotcha.
So I think, you know, I was able to add something to the department in the sense that programs they had not thought about. They hadn't really taken the time to do things with preschoolers or hearing impaired or disabled individuals, whereas I was able to, you know, kind of pinpoint those things that were missing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think sometimes people can cozy up to females better to talk, and they're more comfortable. So I think I added that, you know, to the division also.
I mean, quite honestly, that's what inclusive, you know, we talk about inclusive environments. That's exactly, you know, your case in point. Bringing a whole different perspective is something that, you know, the male brain not even think about over in this realm where you come in, like you say, hey, this is what's missing. And then again, you are that voice that can reach out to families and children, you know, and they're going to respond. They're going to listen to you.
Right.
So you were at the department. You worked 20 plus years. You decided to retire.
Yes. Retirement?
Yes. What was the retirement about?
I thought since I had pretty much just the opportunity to learn some different things, you know, after the fire service, because, I mean, I was still in my 40s. So I decided to work in family court and work with the children again. And, it just opened up some new areas for me to learn some new things, you know, education. So here I am. I'm going back. It was like going to university again, you know, learning how to work with youth and how to deal with family issues and just looking at our city and what it was needed. I mean, at that time, it wasn't so much gun violence, but it was a lot of drug violence, you know, drug issues with the children, getting involved in drugs and things like that. So I just wanted to see what I could do, if I could jump in and do something.
So you just said another avenue where you can get in and help your community.
Right.
And that's, a lot of people don't know. I mean, I was juvenile probation at the time, and that's where I got a chance to work with you.
Right.
And got to see you, in action and hear some of these stories. And I mean, I used to, cherish some of our little conversations, that you'd share and open up and talk about some of the stuff on the fire department. But that's awesome, because, I mean, most people, I think they get a job and you could easily just set pat and roll it on out. You looked around and said, how could I get in and attack this from, a different angle?
Right.
So that is awesome. That is great. There was a children book, that was written about you. What was your role? Because I remember, I got a chance to go to a couple book fairs and things because of my children's book that I wrote. So I know Carol Butler was the author, and Teresa Yarborough was your illustrator.
Correct.
What was your role? How did?
Carol, I call her Fort Wayne's Oprah. She wanted to do something, for the children in Fort Wayne, especially the children of color. And she said they need something that they can feel good about, or someone that they could feel good about. So when she and I, we were at one of her programs she was doing for women. She had some women initiative program that she would do conferences once a year, or I think at least once a year. And I met her at one of her conferences, and we had a conversation about me being on the fire department. And I don't know if we were talking about me being the first, but just that fact that I had been on the fire department. And she said it gave her an idea that she thought that she should write a book about it. And she said that was something in her heart to do, and she would find a way to do it. Hmm. And then so she would call me and just interview me, like maybe a couple of times a week she would call me. And I think we did that for at least a year. And so I wasn't sure she was actually going to do a book. I mean, I kept going, she's not going to, she may do a book. She may not do a book. But I didn't really get really excited about it until she actually showed me the rough copy of the book. And I was like, really, a book?
Gotcha. And an excellent book it is.
A good job.
She did. She did a great job. And then that's what I want to ask you, too, Teresa Yarborough.
Is it Ridley? Yes, that's Richard's daughter.
Correct.
The first black firefighter's daughter is Teresa. Yeah. And they call her Shelly. Yeah. But, just a beautiful, wonderful woman. And, when she said that she was going to be the illustrator, and I mean, it just hadn't hit me that she was Richard's daughter when I first met her. And I finally, I was like, oh, that's who she is. I said, what a beautiful woman. But, what I liked about the book was the way Carol put so many mentors in the book. I was not the only mentor. I mean, she had, the other four women that were first, and then she had the girl that was someone that admired her, and then she even mentioned the first woman fire chief of Fort Wayne, Amy Biggs, in the book. Yes. I said, Carol, did you purposely do that? Nah, she probably did, but I think she said she didn't even think about it.
No, you're right. And that's there was a couple of things, and that's what I wanted to ask. Were they coincidence or whether it's intentional?
I know.
And so yeah. You said you're not sure.
I'm not.
But yeah. But
yeah, she did. She put lots of mentors in there for us to think about.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was good.
And now you've been honored with a Sam Jones Trailblazer Award.
Mm, mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, I'm not even sure how I got, how they even thought about putting me in there. I don't know who recommended it. I was anonymous, someone. And so when I went and I met with the governor at the time was the past VP.
Yeah.
And Pence. And then it was just, I mean, it was a good feeling, you know, to think what they were thinking about giving me an award, you know, for doing my job. And so, you know, to have something like that, it's a surprise, but it was a good surprise.
Gotcha.
It was a good surprise.
And like you said, Governor Pence was instrumental in getting you that award, and that led to you being on the commission. Was that fire safety?
And, yeah, it was
fire prevention, building safety.
Standards.
Commission.
It was that standards commission, and I was on that for about 3 years. Basically, you know, just traveling around the state of Indiana for those meetings, and usually they would have a meeting at least once a month.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. And now March 16th. What we got going on March 16th?
Oh, I call this Anita's Women's History Event. Anita's Crusoe's Women's History Event. And we are going to be celebrating women's history. We're going to be celebrating Weiser Park Girls Reading Team. And we're calling them Diamonds. Those girls, they changed their reading team name to Diamonds, because that's what we call them. So we're having the opportunity to inspire the future, talk about the past, what has opened the doors for us as women. And we also would like to keep open the idea that we need to keep those options open for women. All the things, the laws and things that have made it possible for us to work in non-traditional jobs, to be able to make decisions about ourselves, our health, our children, just, you know, to be able to work places without harassment because of things that have nothing to do with our job or our performance. So those are the kind of things that we're trying to initiate on the 16th.
That sounds like a great
event. We're going to have some food, too.
Where is it going to take place at?
It's going to be at BIPOCA on Fairfield. And one of our sponsors is over that. She's the curator over the BIPOCA, the artist.
Okay.
And that's Clydia. Clydia Early.
All righty, Clydia. Okay.
Yeah, so we have some really nice women that are powerful women that are going to be involved in making this successful event.
Well, good. But you know, as I can say, it has truly been a pleasure hanging out with you today. Anytime I can sit down and talk to you, it's always an honor for me. You are what we call a quiet storm. You know, nobody ever is sure what's burning inside of somebody. And a lot of people make the mistake of, as they say, taking someone's kindness for weakness. Ever since I know you had a smile on your face, but if you see something that isn't right or you feel it's an injustice, that smile turned to, you know, a look of concern, and you do something about it. So, hearing about your story today, we appreciate you.
Thank you.
You are a testament to women, not just in Fort Wayne, but to everywhere.
Thank you so much.
And so, with that said, ONV, up close in Fort Wayne, we're out of here.